Few modern novelists have mined the history and psyche of a city the way William Kennedy has mined Albany, New York. His trilogy, Legs, Billy Phelan's Greatest Game, and the Pulitzer Prize-winning Ironweed, was set there, and so is his new novel, Quinn's Book. Book critic John Leonard says the deeper Kennedy goes, the richer the treasure.
"Remember, Daniel," says the newspaper editor to the young man who's about to go off and report the American Civil War, "the only thing worth fighting for is what is real to the self. Move toward the verification of freedom and avoid gratuitous absolutes." Young Daniel Quinn doesn't know what the editor's talking about, but he'll find out when he returns from a universe of racial dying to an Albany, New York, where a class war goes on, where poor white immigrants are the slaves and a new alliance of the Irish and the blacks must be raised if a democratic social order will ever come to be. Yes, Albany, New York. We know from previous novels by William Kennedy that in Albany the dead rise up and ghosts talk. But nothing in his earlier books prepares us for the Civil War Albany of Quinn's book. All of our nation's history comes out of its grave, in every ethnic variation, hallucinating to seize the reader by the throat. There are floods and fire, an iceberg and demented pigs. Drowned women enjoy sex. The beautiful orphan Maud reads minds. Young Quinn, who loves Maud, sees the future in the eyes of madmen, dead whores, and children of the wild river. Black Joshua, a conductor of the Underground Railroad that moves slaves from the South to Canada, hangs 6 feet above the tomb of the outcast and half-breed Amos, half-Dutch and half-Indian. Rich old men are murdered by owls, and there is hidden in the bottom of a birdcage an ancient magical Celtic disc, a divine riddle, a bloody coin. This is Whitman's America, from the bottom up. Meet John the Brawn, boat captain, professional boxer, saloon keeper, sex fiend, and Magdalena Colon, actress, courtesan, and witch, and Dirk Statz, a conspiracy theorist before his time, which is why his tongue's pulled out, and Will Canaday, editor, abolitionist, and reader of Montaigne. With Quinn, we go to labor riots, or stand by and watch the forced relocation of poor white Irish from Dutch nativist Albany, in boxcars, like Indians or Jews. There is no work and no love either, and so they sing lullabies in Gaelic. This Quinn's grown up, from 1849 to 1864, full of fatal quizzicality. To what purpose? According to Kennedy, we would call it his will to alter existence, to negate life's caprice, and become causality itself. History has made Quinn into a writer. He believes that words used well can reveal the harmony lurking beneath all the contraries and cacophonies. But history has also made him a warrior. Quote, "He would wake up dreaming of his disc and its faces, a savage dream of a new order, faces as old as the dead Celts, forces in the shape of a severed hand and a severed tongue that would bring Quinn great power over life." Quinn's book, part social and moral history of 19th century America, part portrait of the artist as a young man, part epic poem and song of wounds and dream and myth and mystic incantation, is all a dazzle and a wonderment.
John Leonard writes about television for New York Magazine and is a columnist for New York Newsday. He reviewed Quinn's book by William Kennedy.